And welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about community matters. Here's the rundown. We'll start the bi-weekly news review with Tom Morfitt, the editor of the Chilkat Valley News. Our talking topic today is a look at the possible future for the Haynesboro School District. The president of the school board, Anne-Marie Palmieri, will be with us, as will the superintendent of schools, Michael Byers, and the borough mayor, Stephanie Scott. We'll check in with the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium local clinic, and hey, who are you? Introduces us to another community member. We will also preview PM Forney's 12th rule of considerate conduct. Let's go. And a good day to you, Tom Morfitt.
Good day to you, Deborah.
How are things going?
Well, seems a lot like yesterday, doesn't it?
It certainly does. One gray day into another.
You know, next week is going to be Groundhog Day.
Oh!
I believe it's the 2nd, isn't it the 2nd of February? Groundhog Day?
I don't know. Next week will be the 2nd of February, sometime
yeah,
next week.
Yeah, but, and isn't what the whole, okay. This is what that whole premise of the Bill Murray movie was. Every day seems like the next.
Next day, right.
And, you know, I don't think our resident groundhog has seen his shadow for a long time.
Well, I never really understood any of that, you know. Growing up here, I didn't even know what a groundhog was. So
we could have a porcupine. We could have a porcupine roll out of a den somewhere and look around.
Okay. Well, have we got a week chock full of news or what?
Well, yeah. It's been kind of busy. We're rolling right into the public meeting / budget season this time of year. It's typically when our administrators kind of throw their hands up in the air and say, there's no money. And
this is a script.
It seems like I've been through it about 25 or 30 times. And the legislators say, there's no money. And then by, you know, it's dark this time of year and things seem bleak. And then by May, the sun's coming out.
And there's money.
And there's money. And everybody gets the raises. And I would like to point out that because there already has been all the prognostication that, oh, geez, this is really going to be tough this year and there is no money. And we mean it this time, that it is an election year for the state of Alaska. Mm-hmm. And it seems like every other year, of course, every 2 years, there's a statewide election. In those years, the money does tend to flow out of the Capitol. Mm-hmm. It's mysteriously, when people need to get elected, yeah, the money does come from somewhere, and people get reelected. And so I just want to kind of tip people off to watch for that. There is a pattern, I guess, of at the beginning of the budget, people saying there is no money, and last year, in fact, we saw some cuts at the borough. Right, the pool took some cuts, the museum took some cuts, and so it will be interesting to see what happens.
And the cuts primarily are driven by the fact that the revenue is not coming from the feds to the state and then passed on to us as readily.
Well, they don't have any money. Apparently there's still not any payment in lieu of tax money coming down through the federal
which
government.
Which is significant for us. I think it's equivalent to about $250,000. Right.
And then there's not as much state money. What they're saying.
Right.
But
it will be revealed. All will be revealed.
Well, I just want to share with the listeners my personal experience is. As a person who watches that, there's always money. The question is there willingness to tax and spend?
Mm-hmm.
And I remind the listeners that in the 1970s, the mill rate in the city of Haynes was up to 17 mills. Now, you can't even do that now because there's a 10-mill tax cap. That's property tax cap.
Mm-hmm.
But we were up to 17 in the 1970s. And as far as I know, we weren't in the 1970s a community of crazy tax and spend liberals.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had kind of a paradigm shift where I think beginning kind of with the Reagan Revolution, probably around 80, you know, taxes became verboten. And then we put ourselves in a box where we say we have no money. And the state of Alaska does it as well. And most states down south would say, wait a minute, you have a fiscal crisis, but you don't have an income tax. how does that work?
Right, I understand. And you give people money to live there. Yeah, I know.
How can you have a fiscal crisis?
Right, right.
So anyway, we look forward to all that stuff.
Okay.
And then coming up, the assembly's probably going to make a decision on a police chief.
Okay. There is a meeting on the 28th of January.
It's expected to be a recommendation.
Next Tuesday.
Yeah, okay. Expected to be a recommendation from interim manager Julie Kazi between two finalists, very, very similar, kind of retired police officers into who are now into kind of education side of policing.
Uh-huh.
Older gentlemen, they're both 55. They have similar resumes. And so I guess this is the candidates, because Mr. Lowe was kind of the same generation of guys that went and were cops for 20 years somewhere else. So it's interesting that those are the people that we're tapping now.
Rather than new recruit, I mean, new graduates of policing school or whatever.
Right. Or from within Alaska. I mean, Gary Lowe was from Arkansas or Illinois.
No, he was from Illinois.
Illinois, right. Okay. And these guys are from Idaho and Colorado. So, interesting. And then another story we have this week in the paper is the state is putting out a basically a proposal to lease, mineral lease, 90,000 acres of subsurface rights, and that's adjacent to the Palmer deposit.
And that's owned by the mineral, Mental Health.
Mental Health Trust.
Mental Health Trust.
That will be interesting to see.
Well, I know that the Mental Health Trust in the last couple of years, maybe the last 5 years, has made a very public statement about
their developing their
property.
Resources,
so this should not be a real surprise to us, but here it is.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense. Right now, there's money in minerals, and they have these subsurface rights, and it took them years to get even survey, I think, their lands, right? It took decades for all that stuff to come forward. So this is a fruition of that. Other thing I want to do is shout out for Chris Brooks,
Alcan
local winner of the Alcan since Dennis Miles did it in 1991. And coincidentally, Chris got his start from Dennis, working for Dennis. He saw Dennis's Alcan trophies, and Dennis got him into it. So
a mentor.
What comes around, yeah.
Great.
So,
okay, and we have a trial starting. Trial with John Katzik.
John Katzik, federal trial down in Juneau starting up. I don't understand the nexus of it with vis-a-vis the Ron Martin trial, how that, if the allegations are all tied up to that. I haven't read that. I don't know. Margaret might know. The federal trial is starting in Juneau.
Okay.
Some locals were called down for jury duty. So we'll see where that goes.
And you attended the school board meeting, community meeting of the school board in Mosquito Lake.
Yeah.
This last
great week. Great meeting. And,
we'll be talking about that a lot later on in the program.
Yeah.
But I would like to just get your perspective on it,
It reminded me so much of the mining summit here. No agenda, or very loose agenda. Just put people in a room and see what comes out. And some pretty remarkable things came out of that meeting. One was the realization that what's happening up there at Mosquito Lake is the same thing that's happening here in town. We're losing students, and that has real ramifications for our programs and our standards and everything else that we consider a school here. Mm-hmm. And what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And the folks up at Mosquito Lake and up the highway are people who have ideas. They have never been timid about voicing their opinions. And they came out and they told the school board, you can do A, B, C, which was, extend the school to eighth grade, market the school, or make it an alternative school. And so they stepped up to the plate in terms of, I think, ideas, which is the first step. And,
it did not include closing the school.
No,
somebody else has to represent that idea, I suppose.
Well, yeah. The school, it's interesting that school was there 10 years before there was even electricity up the highway, and it was an operating school. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's been a lot of development up the highway since then. Subdivisions gone in, two or three of them, and a lot more houses and value coming out of that part of the of the borough.
Mm-hmm. And they get taxed for the school district just like everybody else.
Right. But interesting that the school population, which apparently in the mid-80s was up to 28, now cannot, can't even reach 10 right. at a time when you would think it would be easier to live up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of interesting irony there. But the other thing that the residents brought out up there was that school has kind of been a community center for that area.
Mm-hmm.
There were movies up there. A resident reminded us that there was a community education program up there. Folks would gather at that school. So I think there is a nostalgic mm-hmm. attraction mm-hmm. or connection to that school. When you think about it, it's something that the government's doing right now that has a core of support. So it seems like the borough could, and just from a PR perspective, get a lot of points by finding some solution up there.
There seems to be a will and an energy to do that, at least to look at the options and see what plays out.
It'll be a lot of work.
Great. It'll be a lot of work. Thank you, Tom, for that reminder. Mindful of Others. PM Fornes, the author of Choosing Civility and co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project, has granted us permission to present selections from his book published by St. Martin's Press in New York. The first rule of civility, pay attention. Second, acknowledge others. Third, think the best of others. Listen, be inclusive, speak kindly, don't speak ill. Accept and give praise. Respect even a subtle no. Respect others' opinions. Mind your body. And today's rule, number 12, is be agreeable. Civility mandates that we at least make an effort to harmonize our plans with those of others whenever we have no compelling reason not to. Contradicting just for its own sake is very uncivil. Two abilities must be cultivated to be agreeable in conversation. First, the ability to consider that you might be wrong, and the ability to admit that you don't know. So training yourself to consider that you might be wrong and to admit that you don't know will mark a crucial point in your relationships. Accepting your limitations makes you more accepting of others. So look for possibilities to agree. Condition yourself to look for and recognize similarities between yourself and others. Agreement is gratifying and healing. It's the foundation of social harmony. We can make a positive difference in our lives and the lives of others by being agreeable. So, say yes to civility. Give and receive. Be agreeable. Healthcare needs are served in Haines by a variety of providers, both public and private, and we are uniquely served by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SERCH. We call it SERCH, formed originally to serve only Alaska Natives. But it's the community's clinic, and today we are checking in with Marcia Scott, the clinic administrator, to be updated on clinic activities. So welcome, Marcia.
Thank you, Deborah.
You're
Thanks
very
for
well.
Asking
I'm so me. Glad to see you here. I wanted to talk with somebody from SERCH for quite a while. So there is a public health nurse. There are several private doctors practicing in Haines. What are the advantages to using the clinic here in Haines? What does the clinic offer?
Well, we offer a wide variety of services, certainly. We have a pharmacy for our patients. We have physical therapy. We have a variety of providers, from MDs to mid-level providers. We have women's health programs, dental services.
All in one room. I mean, all in one facility.
Under one.
Sure.
We have behavioral health, mm-hmm. and we have a behavioral health clinician who serves in the clinic a couple days a week. Mm-hmm. We're trying to incorporate behavioral health into primary care.
And SERCH has programs all over the community. Like, there's a domestic violence program. There's a and the buildings are scattered around. You still have a service provided down here at the what used to be called the Green Dolphin building.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What is that office?
That's the behavioral health office.
Oh, okay. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And so you're really all over the community, a total blanketing most of the needs I suppose, right? all of the needs of the community.
But we're also a federally funded community health center, and so we offer discounts to patients who qualify. Mm-hmm. On a sliding scale.
Do you collaborate at all with other private doctors and services, healthcare services in the community? Is there collaboration? Partly I'm thinking of the technology that you have available to you. I mean, I've been to the clinic where I see you hovering around large machines that have, like, you know, talking to doctors in faraway places about, you know, x-rays and things that you're looking at.
We do. Dr. Kirsted provides some on-call for us, and we do x-rays for other providers in the community that mm-hmm. can send their patients over for x-rays. Mm-hmm. And they refer to our services, to physical therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. So basic clinic programs are funded by the federal government through Indian Health Service, I believe, right?
Right.
Okay. And so how has sequestration and other cutbacks in federal funding impacted the local program that you have here?
It has impacted our program. During the last budget cycle, you know, our budget year starts in October, we were asked to reduce our expenses. Search is getting less money, from what I understand, from IHS or from the federal government. We have a lot of grant programs, too, and we also, our revenue also comes from patient billing. But we have made some reductions in our expenses.
But has there been a reduction in services? Are the things that you've actually had to cut back in being able to provide certain things?
We haven't reduced our services, no.
Okay. So how, and I also know there's a lot of change. I don't know that there's a lot. You tell me. You tell me what changes are ongoing right now, personnel-wise. I know that we've lost Noble Anderson and Julie, I think, have left the community now. And what's the impact on the staff there?
That's right. We have had, I think it's most noticeable, we've had some staffing changes. Dr. Anderson has moved to Juneau, and he's working at the Ethel Lund Medical Center. That's the search facility in Juneau. Mm. And Julie, who used to be a half-time nurse at our clinic, took a job with Airlift Northwest. So Dr. McCandless is our new medical director, and we're currently recruiting for a full-time physician.
How many full-time physicians do you have on the...
We have we'll have two full-time physicians, and Dr. Hines has reduced her hours to half-time, so her patients will certainly see that impact. It may be a little more challenging to get an appointment with Dr. Hines. And Dr. Marnie Hartman, our physical therapist, her hours were reduced from full-time. She voluntarily reduced her hours from full-time to three-quarter time. That's essentially going from 8 hours a day to 6 hours a day. But she can essentially see the same amount of patients.
So will there be somebody moving in to take on the load? Like when you say so Dr. Hines has been reduced to half.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody will come in and pick up the other half, or the
No, we're just recruiting for a full-time physician to fill okay. in the space that vacated by Dr. Anderson. We're currently recruiting for a full-time dentist.
Oh, that'll be great, won't
mm-hmm.
it?
and next week we actually have a candidate who will be working, Dr. Wagner. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that he loves it and wants to stay.
Where is he from?
I think he
Florida.
Is from... No, I think he's from Montana or Wyoming.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Yes. So, we're looking forward to meeting him. Other changes... This isn't really new, but maybe since September, Marty McWilliams joined the behavioral health staff. Mm-hmm. He's a licensed... professional counselor. He has about 25 years of experience in behavioral mental health counseling and mm-hmm. substance abuse crisis counseling. So he's a great addition to the search team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And okay, so the other day, I think last week or very recently, we interviewed or checked in with the Lynn Canal Mental Health Clinic. So the services provided by search are not related to that at all, to Lynn Canal Counseling. That's actually hadn't really clarified for myself that there's actually two mental health clinics in the community then.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that never really was clear to me, but right. There it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And then other Newsworthy items. We recently passed a joint commission accreditation survey. It's the first time our clinic has been accredited with the joint commission. Previously, we were accredited through the Association for Ambulatory Healthcare.
And what does that mean then for the community or for the clinic?
Well, the joint commission, they come in and look at your operations to see that you're meeting certain standards for patient safety and patient care. They're pretty rigorous. And this was a search-wide accreditation, but they did come and look at our clinic specifically. And so we're happy that we're accredited for, I think, 3 years. There is a new patient accounting system that's just being implemented this week.
And what does that mean?
Well, we hope it'll mean some improvements in our billing system.
So you'll be billed in the same month that you had the services, maybe?
I hope so.
is that a goal?
It'll certainly be a goal. But yes. It streamlines the process, certainly, for our office staff and...
Is this just new software that's being introduced?
It's a new accounting software, yes. Okay. And we're starting a new initiative with the Indian Health Service. It's called Improving Patient Care. It's a web-based kind of teleconference learning process. It's over 15 months, and the goal is to improve access to care, improve the delivery of patient care, kind of using data to monitor your quality of care, meeting certain benchmarks and best practices. So patients may see some changes eventually. Other clinics within Search have participated in this collaborative, and they Juno has same day access. When you call to get an appointment, they get you in the same day.
And is that
day.
A goal of ours now too?
That would be great if we can do that. Yeah,
well, I really am 15 months. Energized by I see it happening everywhere with program services that are trying to be a lot more scientific, I guess, using data collected to help analyze, you know, how they're delivering their product, their services, and then responding to that by making changes.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's a really cool thing. You're like science driven. That's the
right.
new the code word. Let's be science driven.
That's right. And patient driven as well. We want to put the patient in the center of it and let them identify their care team and provide better continuity of care.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Marcia. It seems like a lot of things happening at the clinic.
There always are.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us
today. Thanks for
having me. You bet. Right. The primary purpose of a borough in Alaska is to provide context for a school district. The federal government and the state government impose criteria for curriculum and restrictions on funding, but the main business of local government is to provide a mechanism and influence for education of its citizens. State formulas for funding education based on enrollment are debated continually, and the process is often disruptive. In Haines, the decline in enrollment and the job of the district to try to predict the rate of decline is becoming increasingly problematic. It affects how we create our budgets and fix our tax rates and even whether or not to operate. Today, Margaret Frieden, our KHNS News Director, is talking here in our studios with School Superintendent Michael Beyer, School Board President Anne Marie Palmieri, School Board member, just a minute, Sarah Chapel, and School Board and the Mayor, Stephanie Scott, about the possibilities for our school in the future, which is sooner or later.
Okay, thanks, Deb. All right, so a lot of issues to cover today with four of our guests, and I think I might start with Michael. Let's start with the funding, because that's kind of where everything stems from,
and,
I guess.
And I would like to just start by saying that yesterday I received a call from the Department of Education, at our State Department of Education, and they were calling to announce that our elementary school, which last year received a distinguished Title I designation, is also being nominated by the Commissioner of Education as a Blue Ribbon School this year because of overall excellence and because of the progress we have made in bringing low-achieving students up, their scores up over the years.
Wonderful. And, okay.
Yes, that's a very big award.
That is big.
You know, last year our high school was nominated as a Blue Ribbon School. Didn't get it chosen, but the nomination itself was pretty distinguished.
Okay. Well, congratulations to the school then. So let's start with funding, because that's kind of where everything stems from in a way. And in Alaska, education funding has been a hot topic for years because of this. The legislature doesn't seem to be forwarding out many years. They seem to kind of come in during the legislature, decide for next year we're going to give this bulk of money, but that doesn't really help in long-term planning, as far as I can tell. So can you kind of give us, I mean, again, it looks bleak from what school supporters are saying. So do you kind of want to lay the foundation for this year, Michael, as far as what you're focusing on and what the school is most concerned about coming from the state?
Right.
And then we'll get to the borough a little bit.
Well, the state funds schools through a mechanism called the base student allocation and increases to that base student allocation. There haven't been none over the last 4 years. And just last night in the governor's State of the State, he did propose putting in a slight increase, although it wasn't in the budget that came out in December. But at any rate, they're back a few years ago, before that 4 years, there was a education task force that actually met with school districts all over the state. And for 3 years, we had additions to the BSA.
And that's base student allocation.
Base student allocation, and it's very instrumental in allowing us to fund our programs. In particular, you know, we've made great additions to our voc ed program through the years, and through all of our programs, and we have done relatively well. There are other school districts that are cutting massively, but we're starting to feel the pinch now, and we're looking next year. I mean, we also have some reduced enrollment, but we're looking right now next year, and this is just a very rough estimate about, you know, we could see as much as a $400,000 deficit, which we'd have to close. That's tough.
Okay. And then Michael or Stephanie here on the borough also contributes funds. Now, the state dictates that they must give a certain amount, but they can't go over a certain amount either. And as far as I remember, we're kind of in the middle. Is that right? The recent funding from the borough is fallen between those 2 points, the minimum and the maximum that a local government can give to the district.
Right.
Okay.
This last year, the minimum was just under $1 million, and the borough is funded a little over $1.5 million. And they've been consistent with that over the last 3 years or so.
Okay. So that sets a foundation. Now we got the borough and the school board going into budget time of year, basically. And one of the big struggles or challenges that the school board is going to have to think about is what to do about Mosquito Lake School. So enrollment has dropped under 10, which kind of reconfigures this formula that the state uses for funding a school. And so, Anne-Marie or Sarah, do you want to talk about where that is kind of the Mosquito Lake? We had the meeting out there Tuesday, and where that kind of stands right now to set the scene.
Right. So we had the meeting at Mosquito Lake on Tuesday evening, and I would say there were about 30, 35 people who were out there. And it was a great group. The discussion was dynamic and full of suggestions and a lot of good energy and momentum, I think, was in the room. The situation with the budget at Mosquito Lake is that the state has a threshold of 10 students, which will provide kind of this extra money for the building itself. So that's really our bright line for running that school, is to have 10 kids. So what we're trying to figure out right now is how to offer services at Mosquito Lake, and what services to offer, and what programs that might encourage people to send their students there.
Okay. And you mentioned to me that you don't want to close it. You're working from the premise of not closing it. As far, maybe I'm mischaracterizing that, you tell me. The board is trying to work from that premise of trying not to close it, but that is one of the options.
Right.
Okay.
Right. We want to see, you know, what we can do. You know, what are the options? What, you know, try our level best to come up with good ideas and some type of program or something to keep that school operating.
Okay. Mayor Scott?
Well,
you're not even letting me ask a question.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
no, that's just, okay. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that the municipality, the borough, is required to invest in the school district. And I do think of the money that the community puts into the school district as an investment. We put in $1.5 million, but we get from the state, you know, almost $4 million. So it is, you know, it is an investment. And because the money that we invest in the school district is tax dollars, everybody is paying for that investment regardless of whether or not their children are going to the school district. So my question is, how can the school district court more customers, families that are living in the district but are not sending their kids to the school? Because it's that would bring more money into the school, and it's basically the parents have more choice now. They have the choice to send their kids to a variety, include their kids in a variety of programs that are sponsored by other districts. So the other districts are counting our students into their population, and they're getting the base student allocation.
Right.
So I think that just sort of looking at education as a business case, it would behoove us to figure out how to capture all the customers that we can. Given that we're such a small community, when any service loses customers, whether it's sewer and water, harbor, a retail outfit, it has a greater impact just because of our size.
Well, that was a question I was going to bring up. I'll move on to that right now, and then I come back for the question I have for you. But maybe, Michael, I know you've been in education in the state several years, a long time. So have you seen the shift of just operating a school district, being a teacher, being a superintendent or an administrator? And has it shifted in a way in the last few years where now, I mean, I went to a private school for some of my school career, and it was a private school that was doing marketing or fundraisers. And now it almost seems like the public schools are having to switch and do some of that. Do you feel like you're having to recruit students to keep a public school viable?
Well, I think we have to react to our customer base to a degree, and that's parents and students. You know, we are trying to make programs that are relevant and are valuable to students. You know, we look ahead and we know that we're going to be graduating them into the big world, and we want to provide them with all the tools possible to contend with that world. And we want to keep them involved and engaged in school. We spend a lot of time doing those things, and that's one of the reasons, you know, why we made the Blue Ribbon status and we've gotten the accolades, because we have worked on those programs, and we have, and they're important, you know, and keeping programs like art and music and voc ed, hugely important, and it keeps kids' interests.
Okay. Well, okay, let me go back to Stephanie for a minute, and then I want to ask Sarah, because you were at the meeting and you had some comments there. But Stephanie, do you think it's makes economic sense to keep Mosquito Lake School open. I mean, this is, it's not necessarily part of your decision, but the borough has an interest because the borough deals with a major maintenance, which would be a building. If you close the school, you would have a building in Mosquito Lake, and some of the funding that the borough sets aside for the school is, you know, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the school district, if they achieve the bright line, as Anne-Marie said, of 10 students, then it will continue to make as much economic sense as it's made in the past. the state actually has set that standard. And so the state is saying that it's worth this very high investment in our students who live in a rural, more isolated venue in order to bring the education close to them so that they don't have to travel to a school further away. So it's more expensive to provide that education, but the state has determined that if there are 10 students in that situation, that a school is justified, and all of the costs, which are considerable to run that school, are justified. The budget for Mosquito Lake, according to the school district data that they provided on Tuesday night, is about $244,000. And so there are 10 students. If there are 10 students, it's about $24,000 per student, which is a little bit more than it costs it to per student, as in seeing a student as a unit in town. So, you know, the more students that you have up there, originally, the school was created because there were so many students living up there. Mm-hmm. We heard that there were 28 students enrolled in Mosquito Lake School at one point in time. And, you know, I think the families that live up there have to come forward and say, we want this school for our kids. And if they don't, then they don't. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't make sense to keep it open.
Okay. Well, Sarah and Anne-Marie, you were everyone here was at the meeting, but let's talk to Sarah for a moment. One of the things, there were several things that came up at the meeting, and there were I was surprised at the different kinds of community members that were there. Some of them were parents, some had been students, some had been teachers, some were currently homeschooling, some were currently sending kids to Clukwan or sending kids in town. So there were lots of ideas. I guess I'm trying to get your grasp as to what did you come away with from that meeting with all those ideas?
Well, I'll say I was very impressed with the turnout and with the diversity of interest and opinion in that room. The energy was great. The ideas were great. And I walked out of that meeting feeling very hopeful about the future of Mosquito Lake School. We as a school board understand the incredible resource that we have at Mosquito Lake, but I think we've been relying on parents and families to just kind of understand that on their own without doing maybe the marketing necessary to let people know about what a great resource we have there right now.
Is that kind of a different role than you thought you'd have on the school board? Because, with the amount of homeschoolers we have in the community, some estimate it like 40 or 50. I'm not sure if there's a solid number. Having those students at the main school would, I guess, in some ways be helpful for funding in some way that you think of that. But certainly for Mosquito Lake, it would be helpful to boost enrollment if you were able to capture some of those homeschoolers. So is that kind of a different mindset that you've had to work from marketing the school?
Well, it's certainly a new idea. I've always thought of my role on the school board as one of as a listener, to come up with good ideas from the community and try to make our schools as good as they can be. I think we have a great school district, and I'm just impressed every day in the things coming out from our children and from our teachers and administrators. But that doesn't mean that we can't be better. And by talking to our citizens and listening to these good ideas, I think we can do better every day. And there were some great ideas that came out of there. The number one idea is the idea of a bus to get kids to Mosquito Lake. If you don't live in the area, maybe you would like to still go to Mosquito Lake School. And there is actually a bus right now that picks kids up in town and takes them out to the Clukwan School. Mm-hmm. There may be an opportunity for us to share that resource with the Chatham School District and pick kids up who would like to go to Mosquito Lake School as well. And that's something that is very possible and is an opportunity for parents who wouldn't necessarily consider making a big drive twice a day to get their kids to school. And there's also some great ideas about new programs that maybe we could offer at the school. And some of the ideas were new programs, but almost just kind of a shift in perspective. We already have the Mosquito Lake alternative. It is a very special school. It's essentially a one-room schoolhouse environment. There are two teaching staff there to work with the smallest and then a teacher to work with older kids. But we already have a really neat multi-age environment there where kids are exploring in the greenhouse and working together on projects and really enhancing that model and making sure that we have the resources for those students to grow within that environment is a great opportunity. So there are some ideas for new programs like Spanish and outdoor education, and
there were some really good ideas and some really vibrant conversation. And I'm wondering, either as you or Anne-Marie or Michael, what is viable though for to decide to help in your decision as to whether to keep the school open for next year? When you're thinking of what can you do with budget, what can you do with personnel as far as keeping the school viable and recruiting?
Well, I think with Mosquito Lake School, it's small enough that the parents who want to send their children there can be as involved as they want to be. It's really an opportunity to shape the school that is best for those students who have signed up to be there. And so in my mind, there's all sorts of ideas that are still on the table. And we don't have to make a decision today about exactly what that will be. But we would like to reach out to families throughout the Chilkat Valley to ask them what they'd like to see and to really talk to people. What would it take to send your student to Mosquito Lake? If you had a student there in the past and you don't anymore, what changed? Or, you know, did you have a problem? Is there something we could do to help? I mean, many students come into town as they get older because they're looking for a change in environment and maybe a larger social situation.
Right.
But there may be a group of students that would really benefit from that small school, small classroom environment that we don't know about yet.
Okay. Michael, how do you manage the budget process every year? Does it give you heartburn because basically you don't know until June how much money, A, you're getting from the state, and B, with this added decision this year, what is your role going to be in making this decision about Mosquito Lake or helping the school board, providing them information?
Well, we're going to be having a series of budget meetings where we're going to be going over the information surrounding the budget. And, you know, especially in a situation that we have been in the last couple of years where there is declining revenue and, you know, hard decisions have to be made. And we want to elicit also responses from the community on that as well. So these budget meetings will be open. There will be workshops, and there will be there'll be a venue for comment, too, from the community. So it's a big process. And, yes, it gives me heartburn to the max because it's tough when you're having to take away a program that you know is valuable for students and such, and we are trying to, you know, sometimes we can find a way to accommodate a change and just do something better, and we will look for that so we don't have to cut a program. But if it continues like this, there's obviously no choice, and so we need to be strategic.
Okay. Oh, Anne-Marie? And then, Stephanie, I have a question for you.
So I just wanted to reiterate what Sarah said, was that, you know, we're at the beginning of this process and we really want to hear from families or anybody who's interested in this discussion, has some comments or suggestions, and we're going to be talking with the rest of the school board and the borough, the community. There's a meeting on February 4th in town where, you know, we would like to have people come and just listen or offer suggestions. At that point, I think it's right before our regular board meeting, and so hopefully the rest of the board will be able to be there and participate in that discussion. So right now we're really in an information gathering stage before we, you know, as Michael said, we're going to start looking at the budget. We're going to have this series of budget meetings. We're going to take all the information and you know, kind of crunch all of our numbers and hopefully, you know, something good will precipitate out.
Okay. Mayor Scott, what do you think the borough is going to be looking at this year as far as when it comes down to the borough deciding the amount it contributes to the school budget this year?
Well, as Deborah said, you know, one of the reasons that we even have boroughs in Alaska is to support education. And so there's no doubt in my mind that in our culture, support for education is fundamental and important, and our budget reflects that. 30% of our general fund goes to the school district now, in addition to what we're required to add. We go beyond that, and we spend $210,000 on activities. But what I think is happening is that our homeschool population accesses other government-supported functions in the borough and uses those to satisfy some educational opportunities. And those are the library, the museum, the Chilkat Center, the pool. And I regard all of those as part of our education funding. And so we have to balance, you know, we have to respond to what the community is asking for. And so you could say, you know, what are we spending on the Haynesboro School District and what are we not spending on the library, the museum, et cetera, et cetera. As you know, last year, in order to shrink our budget, there was a movement to close the pool and to reduce funding to the museum. But those are tiny expenditures in the scope of what we have to raise revenue on through our tax base and our sales tax to spend on the school district. This is a tight year, as maybe we'll find the money in May. But I think that we're going to be looking to reduce spending, which means that if the school district decides to fund Mosquito Lake School, even though it doesn't have its 10 students, that's going to be tough, because that means that we're going to have to find that extra money for the school district in order to run. Nine students bring in $72,700 as opposed to the $308,000 that 10 students bring in. That's a big difference.
Right. Michael, do you have a response? Or I was going to ask you about the comment that she did make about homeschooling. Is the school doing any more either studying about, are more students going to homeschooling? Are they leaving Mosquito Lake to do homeschooling or leaving the main school to do more homeschooling? Do you see that trend at all?
A little bit we've seen, we have amped up our homeschool over the years, and this year we're doing an electronic newsletter. We are letting homeschoolers know of events and activities that they can have their students, their children participate in the school. And we opened up our technology program and extended it to our homeschool families. And we had a big technology night. We're going to continue to support that. You know, these kinds of things. And we're looking at opening and advertising activities to all homeschoolers in the Valley that, you know, they could come to, like we're looking right now at having an assembly and a presentation by the Bald Eagle Center that we're going to try and get the word out to all homeschoolers so that they can come and participate in that. And other things that way too. You know, I mean, we're want to be responsive to the community and work with the community. You know, I mean, yes, we have reduced numbers, but it doesn't mean that and reduce revenues, but it doesn't mean that we can't find better ways to work at things. And we'll continue to do that. You know, I mean, it's happening all over the state and many small schools. I really feel sorry for a lot of these isolated little schools that have gone under 10. We have two foreign exchange students who have come to our school because the school that they were enrolled in at the beginning of the year was under 10. They closed the school. And they don't have a bus like we do that could transport those kids to another school. And that's one thing we do have. But we're going to try and work with the task force that's been put together to look at that up there in the Mosquito Lake community and see what we can do.
Okay. Anybody else have any final words they want to? Stephanie.
I have a question. Are not some Haines families sending their kids to the Chatham State Strait School District to Clukwan?
That's. I don't know how many at the moment, but that has been done in the past, sometimes more, sometimes less, because the Chatham School District runs a bus from here. Mm-hmm. I called to the Chatham superintendent in the fall to see about, you know, if they would be amenable to having Haines students on that bus that they would deliver them to Mosquito Lake uh-huh. School, and at that point he was.
Okay. It is an interesting, I did mean to point that out, because not only, we kind of have two school districts here, because Clukwan is a different school district, although there are some in-town kids and some Upper Valley children, students that are going to Clukwan. So it's kind of another ingredient there. But, well, I appreciate everybody talking about this. I know the discussion isn't over. Like you said, there's going to be more discussion at the February 4th school board meeting, right, Anne-Marie?
That's right.
And there's going to be time beforehand for another sort of community talk about Mosquito Lake. Okay. Thank you, Michael Beyer, Anne-Marie Palmieri, Sarah Chapel, and Stephanie Scott.
Thank you.
Now for my favorite part of Talk Around Town, we get to find out, hey, who are you?
Hey, my name's Bo Graham, and I lived in Haines for about 10 years.
Whoa. Where are you from?
I'm originally from southern Idaho in a small town called Jerome, Idaho, and I came up here on a vacation long time ago.
By yourself?
I actually had a couple buddies that came up here before me, Scott Sundberg's younger brother, Brian, he asked me if I wanted to come up here and spend a month on a vacation. I said, sure.
And what were the activities that you were proposing to do when you came here? I suppose Idaho is a lot like Alaska.
No.
I always think of Idaho with mountains, but what part are you from?
Jerome, is Twin Falls. It's near the southern part of Idaho.
Is it flat?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Very flat. There's tumbleweeds that literally run across the road every day.
Okay, so it's cowboy country.
Yeah.
Okay, are you a cowboy?
I used to be.
Really?
I was born on a farm, and I've been doing farm work and ranch work all up until I came up here. My last job was working on a horse ranch.
So you must ride horses.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
First time I was on a horse was 6 months old.
Oh, my goodness. Well, do you miss that?
I do, and then I don't, because there's a lot of work that goes into it, you know, working on a ranch. Like, you got to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and you got to go to sleep at, like, midnight. So, I mean, it's a lot of work involved there.
How old were you when you left the ranch?
Which one?
When you left Idaho and that career.
I was I was 20 years old when I left.
Okay, and you came here and you haven't left. Is that right?
Right. I came up here on a vacation and I got stranded here. So, I mean, that's take it as it is because that's, you know, it's quite humorous, I think.
Oh, well, is there more to the story? Or just
when I first came up here, the second day I was here, I went to Skagway and blew all my vacation money.
Okay. And he's only 20 years old, right? Let's remember that.
there's a lot of shops in Skagway, so I just had to hit every one of them up except the jewelry stores because I didn't have that special someone yet. Mm-hmm. And I spent it all, and I'm like, wow, what do I do now? So I had to get a job. So I worked at Chilkoot Fish and Caviar for my first Alaska job on mm-hmm. a vacation that, mm-hmm. you know, I saved so much for. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And as I said, you've been here ever since. And I think you have a lot of family connected around.
Yeah, I am.
Tell us, how have you built your family here?
Well, my mom always said that I was going to come up here and marry a Tlingit. And that's what I intended on doing. And
I did. Because your mom told you to? Have you always been a good boy?
Yeah, I always do what my mom says.
Oh, sweet. And she's here living now with
you,
right?
Yeah, she followed me up 2 years ago because I got married, and mm-hmm. I have one biological daughter and one stepdaughter. Mm-hmm. So she wanted to come up because she was missing out on mm-hmm. my younger mm-hmm. daughter's life. So mm-hmm. she uprooted and came up here.
All right. Well, very, very cool. It's good to have you here. Now, if I said, hey, Bo, put your shirt on. Would that have any significance
yes.
to you?
Yes.
Well, then, Bo, put your shirt on. Tell me about your theatrical career.
Oh, it's very short and sweet. Todd asked me a couple months ago if I would be interested in this part, and I said, oh, really? What is it? He's like, well, you have to take your clothes off. I said, I'm in.
Oh! You didn't even ask how much of your clothes, all your clothes, some of your clothes.
No, he just said, you just have to take your clothes off. I said, I'll do it. You know, it's.
That was something that you like was on your bucket list or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. You know, I've been saying for years that I was going to do a play and the right one had to come up. And Todd just, you know, he threw one in there and I said, sure, I'll do it. You know.
Well, you sound like a pretty adventuresome guy, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And where in town, if people don't know you, but they can recognize your voice, where do they find you? Like, what do you do?
Well, I work at Lutech Lumber. That's usually where you can find me. Mm-hmm. I'm also affiliated with the Uglies of Haines, a nonprofit.
But you're not, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not that ugly, I don't think.
No. I do get a big kick out of the idea that you came here with Scott Sundberg's younger brother. I just have to ask this. I mean, is he as tall as you are?
No, he's, you know, he was saying for years that we were neck and neck, and then all of a sudden I just blossomed into like 2 feet taller than him.
Oh, but
he's almost 6 feet. Uh-huh. I'd give him 6 feet.
Okay, all right. Well, Bo, our time is up. There's your life in 5 minutes.
Oh, man, I thought we were here for 5 hours. Not 5 minutes.
Well, we're delighted to have you here for as long as we can have you here, but that's it for the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that's it for Talk Around Town this week. Thanks for checking in with the Community Matters. Thanks to our guests Tom Morfitt, Marcia Scott, Michael Beyer, Anne-Marie Palmieri, Sarah Chapel, Stephanie Scott, and Bo Graham. Thanks also to Margaret Friedenauer, KHNS News Director, Production Engineer, and all-around support. Our next edition of Talk Around Town, scheduled for February 6th, that's in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, be agreeable. You're listening to station KHNS 102.3 FM, Haines, Cluckwan, and Skagway.